Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprint, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Evident Footprints here on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff. I'm going to be with you for the next hour on March the 19th on the West Coast. As I always say, it's March the 20th on the East Coast. That means that those of you on the West Coast are 3 hours younger, with one exception tonight, and that's because one of our guests is from England. And so he is only 2 hours older than me, if we account for British time. Anyway, before I bring our guests on, a quick note of news. I heard on the radio today while I was out and about that there is another Osama bin Laden tape that has come out. This one, an audio tape. And evidently, the Danish authorities, a newspaper, has republished some comics intended to inflame the Muslim community, and bin Laden took offense to that. The difficult thing to imagine here is that someone who could plot to take down 3 skyscrapers in New York City, blow a hole in the Pentagon all on the same day, and crash a plane and cause it to disappear, as all 4 planes did, in fact, would be upset about cartoons published in a newspaper, especially since it's the general consensus of researchers that this gentleman, and I use that word with a little bit of reservation, passed away in December of 2001. So who is the Osama bin Laden whose ire is irked because of the republication of these Muslim cartoons in a Danish newspaper? Now, normally, the bin Laden tapes, when they're videotapes, are followed by an al-Zawahiri tape. Of course, we haven't heard from Mr. al-Zawahiri for several years now. However, when they release these tapes, and of course, we don't know it's bin Laden's tape. They have the English translation voiced over the original audio, so you can't even tell if it's his voice. Could be an old recording. Nonetheless, what I do is I look at the date that the tape is released. And what's interesting, just adding the month and the day, the date being the 19th and the month being March, you add 3 and 1 and 9 and you get 13. It's interesting there are 13 Illuminati families. Now, I do have to account for the 2 and the 8 in 2008, and that makes it a 23. And a 5. So we have 2 sets of numbers. Actually, there are a few numbers. We have a 13. 13 can be broken down to a 4. 23 can be broken down to 5. So we may have something coming our way as soon as April the 5th. Now, I've been right about this many, many times, and I think it's worth mentioning. We may have another tape come out any day. It could be another bin Laden tape. It could be another al-Zawahiri tape. But I'll guarantee you that if one does, it will be an audio tape and not a videotape. It's been their pattern for years. The system works in calculating the London train bombings. It worked in going back and looking at 9/11. Of course, I didn't know the code until after 9/11. I hadn't figured it out. But I immediately saw the pattern, and the London train bombing, of the Spain... Barcelona, I believe it, or no, the Madrid incident, as well as the Bali nightclub bombing, the code works according to the release dates of all of those published videos or audio tapes. And what's interesting is that, again, I repeat, bin Laden is known to have died in December of 2001. So I just want to bring that to everyone's attention. Those of you who follow these things, we may be up for another false flag event. and I don't mean to create fear. We need to understand that these things happen, and we can be watchful, wary, and conscious. And with that, I will move on to more important matters, and that is introducing our guests for tonight on Evident Footprints. They are making their second appearance on the show. When I was on the old network, they were gracious enough to give me, actually, I think it was a two-hour interview that night. They'll be on for 1 hour tonight, possibly a couple extra minutes. That's heads up to Seth there. In the meantime, they have been producing, directing, and publishing videos throughout the world on their website, projectcamelot.org. And they are now quite well known throughout the world, interviewing such people as Dr. Dan Burrish several times, Michael St. Clair, who has been on this show as recently as February the 29th of this year. And Michael's actually been on the show three times, so I think I have maybe one or two more interviews than they do. But they also have a bevy of well-known scientists. Richard Hoagland has appeared in a very interesting series of videos talking about the anomalies on Mars, another topic that we often talk about on this show. So we're in for a wonderful ride. Ladies before gentlemen, so I will introduce to you first Carrie Cassidy and then Mr. Bill Ryan from ProjectCamelot.org. Good evening, folks. How are you?
Hi, this is Carrie.
Hi, Carrie.
And I'm the resident Englishman here, so I apologize to anyone who finds my accent rather weird.
Oh, no, it's distinguished. We've had David Icke on the network, so we're used to it now. So how are you doing? You've been traveling all over the world.
We've been having a lot of fun. It's been exhausting fun, but it's been pretty interesting. In the last month, we traveled to Japan to meet Benjamin Fulford, who many of your listeners will be familiar with. We published his interview yesterday, and we can talk a little bit about that. We went to Norway to meet with Leo Zagami, the ex-Illuminati whistleblower, and we're just about to publish that particular interview. And whereas last year our theme that seemed to be coming at us from all directions was 2012, what seems to be coming at us from all directions this year is the Illuminati and the Vatican connections, which is a real labyrinth, as you may know. It's a very complex subject.
Yes.
Just to back up a little tiny bit, our own introduction to some of your listeners who may not know who Project Camelot is, what we really are is we're two people who, a couple of years ago, we picked up a consumer-grade camcorder costing a few hundred dollars, and we decided to go out and see who would speak to us. And to our astonishment and delight, one or two people did. And at that time, as is still the case, our purpose was basically to learn as much as possible and then to share our learning in real time with everybody out there. And this snowball has been growing and growing over the last 2 years until we have an astonishing array of in-depth interviews with people who are really in a significant position to help enlighten us about what on earth and maybe what elsewhere is happening at the moment. Because many of your listeners, and we know you do, and we certainly do, feel that we are living in extraordinary times. Mm-hmm. There is much, and that's a huge understatement there is much that we are not being told as citizens of the world who deserve to know the truth. There are people in positions of power in the military and in secret societies who consider that they are better than us and they know better than us, and it is their prerogative to keep us in the dark for reasons of their own which suits their agenda. Now, we do not agree with that. We know that you do not agree with that. And all we're trying to do here is to find out what's going on. And, of course, we're not alone in this. There's a huge group of people out there who are all doing the same thing. So we're really all working as part of a team. And what we're doing is we're producing live testimony on camera to be the best possible substitute for those of your listeners who are not able to meet these people in person. We're trying to substitute for that with our video camera by knocking on their door, turning the camera on, and then talking with them about anything that they're willing to talk about. And that's basically what we do. And mm-hmm. in the last 2 years, we've come quite a long way.
Yes. Now, of course, I left many of the names of the famous people you have interviewed off of my introductory list. What comes to mind is David Wilcock, the reincarnation of Edgar Cayce. Now, there are some interesting synchronicities that we're going to be running into throughout the show. About a week ago, I had Win Free on, last Tuesday and last Wednesday. Win Free wrote the book, The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce. And he has two shows on BBS Radio. And I got to meet him a few weeks ago, just after I had interviewed Michael St. Clair, who you also introduced me to. The connections that are just spanning out across the globe are phenomenal. So the work you're doing is highly responsible for bringing a lot of people together in this network that we're establishing, and I want to honor you for that.
It's a great privilege for us. We find over and over again, entirely through happenstance and coincidence, we find ourselves introducing people to other people. An example of that, just a few days ago, this is fairly topical. Some of your listeners familiar with our work will know that about a month or so ago, we were contacted by a Norwegian politician whose name and full ID details we know, but which we've withheld to protect him, mm-hmm. who reported in depth on the existence of Norwegian underground bases and plans for 2012, where the people in power and the key people like scientists and teachers and engineers would all be taken underground while the rest of the population would be left to fend for themselves for reasons unknown. And he told us about this in considerable detail. All of this is on our website. And Leo Zagami, the Sicilian ex-Illuminati member who came out a couple of years ago because he was so disgusted with the black magic rituals and the satanic agenda of the Illuminati and then went to live in Norway in exile, we were able to put them in touch with each other. And they were each delighted that they wanted to talk to each other. We find we're doing this kind of thing all the time, and it's just a byproduct, really.
It's more than just putting them in touch with each other, because what has happened is they actually are able to set up a network between themselves where Leo's son can be looked after from a distance by the Norwegian politician who has his freedom at the moment, and Leo is soon going to be leaving Norway. He has had all kinds of dreadful things go on in his life since we met with him and did our recent interview with him that we're going to be releasing probably in about a week. And so his wife and son have left him. He was arrested. His computers were taken. His cell phone was taken. They're not being returned. His wife and son are now away from him. And he's been devastated, actually, by these events. But at the same time, he was able to connect with the Norwegian politicians, and they have such common ground that they are able to support one another in this time of trial that, Leo is going through. So it's really very heartening when we can actually make connections like this, mm-hmm. not only for ourselves, but for others.
Now, Carrie or Bill, speaking of Leo Zagami, I know that he had done some interviews with Greg Zismansky, and that he had, I actually heard the interviews live, he had told Greg that the Norwegian police had come to his house or his apartment several times threatening to take the child away, or children. I don't know. It seemed to me like he had one or two kids anyway. Whether it's one child or not, it really doesn't matter a whole lot, I guess. The point that I'm getting to is the fact that they well know where he is. Why is it that they want to take him out of circulation, and under what authority? I mean, it's like, well, we're the secret society, and we want him arrested.
Apparently, from what we understand, it's mainly that he has broken with the Illuminati and the Jesuits in particular, and that there is a very strong contingent in Norway, and apparently we were told that the chief in charge of intel has told the Norwegian politician, who they also arrested and detained, although they let him go, and prevented him from meeting with us, by the way, when we went to Norway. He was told that the head of intel disliked Leo Zagami and has a vendetta out for him. We don't know why. None of this is legal. Leo has retained a lawyer. Obviously, it's just his life is being turned upside down simply because he has gone onto the web, you know, been a whistleblower, mm-hmm. and they're just trying to make his life difficult.
Yeah. What they do, Don, to people who become inconvenient to the powers that be, as you know and as you have heard, is they become harassed.
Yes.
What tends to happen, as far as we can see, although on the Camelot site we have a tribute page for people who in the past have paid the highest price for their courage, mm-hmm. you know, people who have, in inverted commas, been suicided, as the phrase goes.
Yes.
But nowadays that doesn't seem to be happening so much. We have not had anyone phone us up saying, listen, guys, you know, if you don't stop your work, we're going to have some of our friends come visit you, and then they'll make that decision for you to shut up for you. Or so, you know, I mean, none of this has happened. You know, what has happened is that we have been sort of plausibly harassed, in the sense that things are gradually becoming more difficult, but there's always an innocent explanation. You know, like, files go missing from Google, files go missing from our site, our car was broken into, nothing was missing, not even a credit card that was there for the taking, you know, no thief would leave that behind, and yet nothing happened, you know. Ever since we got back from our last trip, we've been unaccountably ill, and we've been fighting to recover. I was detained at immigration when I came to the U.S. for 45 minutes and questioned about, you know, how come I was spending so much time in America, and, you know, just as a completely innocent, law-abiding tourist. And all of these things happen, and you get the feeling of being squeezed and leaned on, and we've been told by a lot of reliable people that we're being watched, and we've even been told by one source, much to our delight, that we were considered to be very dangerous. But nothing has actually happened. We're just being made to feel that, you know, we better be careful without anybody actually telling us.
Well,
quite interesting.
I mean, I have to say that in our case, it's much more subtle of a pressure. In Leo Zagami's case, for some reason, the Norwegian police have been incredibly overt. I mean, they took him in for questioning. They detained him for like 12 hours or longer. You know, as I said, they took his computers. They will not return them at this moment. The cell phone as well. You know, there's all kinds of things going on, and that wasn't the only time that he was detained by the police.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But this probably is not what you want to hear about. I imagine that your listeners want to hear something more substantive, and we would be happy to be guided by you in that, because you're probably more aware than we are on what your listeners would like to hear and what they already have heard.
Well, they would love everything you do, so we can start. Well, I would like to just wrap this portion up, not that we're trying to be negative here. This is what truth tellers or light bearers go through. Those who are after the truth and want to present it to the public, and why shouldn't the public have a right to know what's really going on in the world or in the universe? And I think it's a simple matter, and it's rather childish and immature that there are those that just don't want that to happen. They can't stop it from happening. It doesn't matter. When we get to where we can telepathically communicate with each other, we won't need to look at your films. We'll just be talking, and it won't matter whose line they're eavesdropping on. They won't be able to read our thoughts. So we're moving into that reality, and they don't like it. So they have to silence us, or they have to attempt to silence us to create the fear. That's the only thing they understand. And that's why I found your interview with Benjamin so interesting. But Dan Burrish is interesting, and David Wilcock is interesting. I'd like to give the listening audience sort of an outline of the types of interviews that you have conducted. You know, you have these people who are coming forward with these fantastic stories about hidden technology and interspace or intergalactic possibly travel that we are undergoing, and it's being hidden from us, although we're paying for this to be possible through our blood, sweat, and our tears, our taxes. And we're taxed at every stage of our lives. You go buy a candy bar, there's a tax on that. You drink a cup of coffee or a cup of tea or a soft drink, there's a tax on that. And it doesn't matter if you take it with you or you sit someplace and consume it, we are taxed to death. And this money is being used for that. So we have a right to speak about this. Whether they like it or not, we have a right to speak about it, and we will. I think since Benjamin Fulford is so foremost in your consciousness and your memory, having just recently interviewed him, and again, there's a synchronicity there, which I mentioned in an email to Kerry, that I'd been trying to get him on my show about the time you interviewed him, I think. Or you might have interviewed him just after I made contact with him. So we're thinking along the same lines. That's the point here, is that in looking for solutions, I wanted to hear his story about the secret societies, and that's why I was going to bring him on the show, his take on David Rockefeller and all those things. Would either one of you like to, say, gloss over the story a bit to familiarize the listeners with what the interview was about and some of the key points that Benjamin made?
Okay. The summary of Benjamin's extraordinary story that actually first surfaced last year, but I think this is the first time he's been interviewed on camera, is that as a Canadian journalist naturalized in Japan, and reporting as the Asia-Pacific Bureau Chief for Forbes magazine, as a good journalist, he was in a position to make contacts essentially with Japanese politicians off the record and with the Japanese underworld. And he was approached by a real-life ninja last year, who was not like your ordinary Japanese. He's more of a warrior cast. He's one. He described this guy as a little bit like the Japanese equivalent of an American Apache.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy said, and this is cutting a very long story short, he said that he was representing a vast group of Japanese and Chinese secret societies known as the Red and the Green and the Yakuza. And these secret societies contain not only gangsters, but also academics and reputable businessmen, a little bit like the mafia, I guess, and also contain no less than about 100,000 professional assassins. And these people were pretty upset because they had realized that there were bioweapons that had been released that were targeted specifically at Easterners, such as SARS.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Eastern secret societies were pretty upset with the Illuminati, once again to use this as a summary term for the ruling power elite in the West. And Benjamin Fulford basically issued an ultimatum on behalf of the secret societies. He said, look, you know, there are 10,000 of you, there are 100,000 professional assassins, and you don't know who any of them are, and they're getting pretty upset here with the way that the Eastern world is being messed with by the West, and you better knock it off, otherwise it would be quite easy to end the game for you. You're outnumbered, you know. So,
mm-hmm.
So cut it out right now. And the title of our video is called The Ultimatum. Essentially, the Japanese secret society, the Japanese and the Chinese secret societies have told the Illuminati through Benjamin Fulford that if they don't change their ways, come into line, he says the game is over, the world needs to thrive as it should, there's enough wealth in the world to handle all the problems, they need to step down from their self-appointed thrones, their time is over. And if they do not, then they will face the consequences. And Fulford is very serious about what he says. And this is such an extraordinary thing to be said in public with the Illuminati as the intended target. It's like he's talking directly to them. It's like, okay, the game's over. You've got to stop what you're doing. Otherwise, these guys are going to take you out. And they're serious. And you'll never know it's coming, like thieves in the night, you know. And so we went to get the backdrop on all of this, and we got a long and complicated and fascinating story. And ultimately, it culminates in him saying things that are really very clear. We asked him very directly. We said, if there is an American strike on Iran, what action will be taken? And he said, they'll be taken out. He says, all I've got to do is say the word, and the game will be over for these guys. And he said, they know it. And he's confident that there will be no such strike, because this ultimatum is already in force. It's a fascinating story. I mean, it's the kind of thing that you wouldn't dare write into a movie, and yet this this ultimatum is very, very real.
Mm-hmm. I got the overwhelming feeling also that Benjamin was serious. And in fact, when I first heard the story, I think it was December of last year it came out, somewhere around Pearl Harbor Day, I commented to someone, sign me up. You know, I will be a part of this too, in some fashion. I'll be a source of information. I'll root for this. It makes more sense than anything else I've heard. Now, I'm not one to condone violence or murder or anything like that, but these are the very people that are doing that very thing, and announcing their plans to continue doing so, in fact, increasing it exponentially. I think we would be foolish just to sit around and allow that to happen. Enough is enough. And so I'm sure Benjamin is fed up. I'm just as fed up, and you probably are too, having heard that and had it verified. in the manner in which he did. The fact that they're creating these oriental, well, I'll use the term oriental, targeted bioweapons that will just go after the Chinese or the Indonesians or the Japanese or Koreans or Vietnamese. That's sick that they would do that. And they've done that in Africa way back in 1972. Dr. Len Horowitz is still talking about that today. He's talking about that. And that our presidential candidates, and I use that word with reservation, refuse to discuss the fact that AIDS, HIV, AIDS, was developed in a lab in the United States. They just refuse to face the facts about many things that have come to light. Maybe the Internet plays a big role in that, too. They probably never imagined that we would be able to turn it into the tool that we have. And I guess we have Al Gore to thank for that, don't we?
Yeah, I think the Internet has recently been classified by the Pentagon in a paper. Now, you may have the terminology at your, on the tip of your tongue more than us, but the phrase was something like it was an enemy combat communication system, essentially, or something very close to that. And there are apparently plans to close down what is known as Internet 1 and replace it with Internet 2 that's going to be very much more closely monitored. Is this something that's familiar, Ed?
Have you
read this story?
Yeah, that exact thing. I have heard that, yes. It's very familiar to me.
But you're absolutely right. The Internet is, at the moment, while it's a two-edged sword in as much as everything, of course, is monitored and tracked. I mean, that really is a no-brainer. But there are so many people all over the world with information who are being connected. There are variants of the 100th monkey phenomenon that are taking place all the time. There are people, there are critical masses of people who are becoming more and more informed. Because once you get the information out of the bottle, you can't put it back in again. You know, our videos, just to go right back to where we started. Our mission is to make this information freely available. It's like our work is not copyrighted. Just take it and copy it and download it and share it.
Well, actually, I mean, that's not completely true. I mean, it's copyrighted in the sense that we require that Camelot is given credit for our work. But
oh,
on
yes.
the other hand, it is available for free. And can be distributed, and we want it to be out there. We want people to learn from it, you know, and to share it, and to stimulate conversation and debate. You know, that's what it's all about.
Yes, I do exactly the same thing with what I write or anything that I've recorded. Same thing, my archives and interviews and any article or research. Essay that they put out, it's intended to get a message out. And you know, the universe has a way of reciprocating us or rewarding us for what we do. And I don't do this to be rewarded. I do it because I made a promise to do it.
Yeah.
And
we also feel that we're under something of a deadline in the sense that things are changing very rapidly, as everyone knows, on this planet. And we feel that getting this information out there, getting the learning curve, getting people to get onto the learning curve as quickly as possible is really, really important right now. We believe coming down the pike between now and the next few years, people will be encountering some obstacles in their everyday life that they've never experienced before. And we feel that the knowledge that we're bringing will help them to deal with the changes that are coming.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I remarked about your Michael St. Clair interview when that first came out, and what Michael said resonated with me, And I was recently able to get a copy of Zen of Stars and Foreseen. And I'm reliving that whole experience again, seeing that video. These things also appear in other areas of my research and my own experience and the experience of those that I come into contact with. So there is a recurring theme here, and you are right. Time is speeding up. They never, ever imagined that what is happening would happen. They thought they had all of us ensnared in their little fishing net, so to speak. And we have not only extricated ourselves from it, we are changing the whole matrix into a whole new creation. And really, we're looking forward to that. So, you know, those that are devoid of spirit are fretting immensely over what's happening.
Yeah, I think that you've described that perfectly, Don. And the message here is that for any of your listeners who are at this very moment thinking, you know, what can I do? And like you, we get emails every day saying, what can I do? What can I do? And by being aware, and by putting their spiritual shoulder to this huge wheel that we are now all turning, everybody is making a difference. And every single person who is listening to this show and who's waking up and who's thinking, you know what, there's something going on here and I'm being lied to every time I turn on the television to watch Fox News or CNN or even the BBC, you know, anyone who realizes that and they kind of make that internal stand for themselves, you know, that as David Icke said, you know, I am me and I am free and I'm not going to be lied to anymore and I now embark on a commitment to discover the truth, just that internal pledge makes a huge amount of difference. And so every one of your visitors, of your listeners, has the power to add to that collective sort of pool of energy which is amassing, and as you exactly said, the powers that be are not counting on that. And there really is a big standoff which is in the offing. We do not know exactly what is going to happen in the next few years or this year. Like you and like many of your listeners, we've heard different things from different people, and not everything that we hear is in alignment or agreement. What that suggests to us is that there's a huge complexity. There's likely to be some desperate actions which are taken. We're braced for another false flag event, as many people are. But it's a problem for them, because no one's going to be fooled this time. You know, it's like that old Who song from the 70s. It's like we won't get fooled again. You know, And a lot of people haven't even been fooled by 9/11 the first time. No one's going to be fooled the second time.
Yeah.
And we're really kind of playing like a mental game of chess. It's like, well, you know, what might they do to take us by surprise, even though we're trying to anticipate it? And of course, that alone could take up a whole show, just knocking ideas around about what on earth might happen next.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like you, we've heard stories that there may be some kind of a nuclear event. We're not going to give energy to that because we don't want to believe that and we don't want to start to kind of make it happen by expecting it. On the other hand, there could be events which are being staged on the other side of the world right now that are going to pull us into some kind of a situation that is just going to start to snowball. It's likely that something is going to be engineered that will be a huge distraction. It could be an economic event, it could be a geophysical event, it could be a geopolitical event. I think that if we make it through the end of this year and nothing has happened, then it means that there will have been a great change. And so the jury's out about, you know, whether it's going to be that easy or not.
Yes, now, and I'm inclined to agree. Now, in the wonderful interview that you both conducted, primarily it was Carrie, although whenever you brought up a point or asked the question, Bill, you were right on target, and two of you work so well together, I noticed that Benjamin made a very simple and poignant statement saying, just follow the money. Follow where the money goes, and that's what's going on. I had watched the video yesterday, and I watched it twice, and each of the three parts I watched twice, all the way through.
Oh, just, wow, we're flattered. That's great.
And both for admiring your work as well as listening to what he had to say. And I had composed about an hour before. In fact, when I pushed my publish button on my website, I had published an article in response to Christopher Story's farewell article about Wantagate. He's not going to be posting anything in terms of the daily or weekly postings he puts on his website. He's working on a very large volume of international currency review that is going to be a complete description of everything that happened in Wantagate, all the documentation and everything. And I got this feeling, well, where are we going to get information about what's going on? How is this still going to continue to be brought to the public's attention? So I decided to put that on my shoulders, and I wrote a very strong piece tying another connect-the-dots thing of all the financial corruption that's going on in general. It's very general, yet I point out some specifics at the same time. I had pushed the send button, and I received the notice that this film was available. So that was the next thing I did after I had gone through some 5 or 6 years of financial corruption just here in the United States alone, and talking about the international components of it. Then I heard Benjamin talk, and Benjamin basically said everything that I felt. What he said resonated with me, and I had told you that in an email, that in a simple sentence he said everything I said in this article. He wasn't specific, but he made the point, and that was the intention of the article that I wrote. If you have a chance, you know, please visit my website and read that, and you will see exactly what I'm talking about.
Right. He makes a very important point that democracy is not letting other people control your money, and he warns people to never let that happen again, talking about the Federal Reserve and basically what has gone down in this country. And we are going bankrupt. The U.S. is bankrupt. And one thing about Benjamin Fulford is he's a wonderful financial analyst. He really has the whole picture in mind, in a world, in terms of the whole world economically. And, you know, they're offering him the job of Japanese finance minister. There's no guarantee that when the new party comes into power, which I'm not sure if it'll be sometime in April or what's going on, because he said there's a lot of changes going on right now. But basically, he was offered that job, and with good reason, with his years of expertise at interviewing people in the financial markets and influencing them, actually, by writing articles about what was going on. He's in a very unique position, to actually do that for Japan. If that happens, he will be in charge of what I understand is over
$5 trillion
dollars, mm-hmm, worth of assets that Japan has, whereas the U.S. is operating on a huge deficit.
$120 trillion of debt.
Of debt.
Yes.
Japan is actually, you know, on the plus side of that equation. So it's a very interesting game that we're entering now, where the U.S. is actually slowly sinking. It's really an amazing dynamic, and we're getting a lot of secret witnesses coming forward to us, talking about eventual dissolution of the American government, the fact that there will be civil war, that the currency, the dollar, will be no more. There's all kinds of information that's coming our way in this regard.
Yes. I was surprised that his $120 trillion figure was a bit low, at least in my estimation. I know that they have hypothecated up to $600 trillion in these derivative and hedge fund accounts.
Wow.
Okay, and the Federal Reserve, we use the term upside down. They're upside down, approaching $1.5 quadrillion. That's the Fed.
Yeah.
Now, since they're not federal and they're not part of the American government, they can take that back where they came from, that bill. That's my feeling on that. But his $120 trillion was the closest figure I've heard from any source to the one I just mentioned.
Yeah.
By at least double.
That's very, very interesting, Don. I have a little bit of a head for figures, although I'm not an economist in any way. I do know that there are many ways that these things can be calculated.
Yes.
But what I think anyone who really looks at this straight will know and understand that the figures, you know, are huge in terms of the extent to which America cannot continue to operate in the way that it has been. It just can't. It's going to run out of steam. It's going to run out of money. It's going to run out of everything. We already saw this a few days ago when Bear Stearns collapsed. And as you've probably been hearing, that may not be the last we'll hear about that. There may be a domino effect that's going to start. And when that happens, then there's going to be a kind of financial tsunami that's going to actually sweep all the way across the globe. And you've probably been advised, and we've been advised very personally by people who really know. It's like, you know, buy gold and silver and don't keep your money in the bank because it may not be there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we take this very seriously. It's like there's going to be a correction. As they say in the financial markets, there's going to be a global correction. And this, going back to what you were saying about Benjamin Fulford, he's saying, you know, listen, you Illuminati guys, if you don't correct it, we're going to correct it for you. And one of the ways financially that he can start to implement that correction, as Kerry said just now, he may, you know, if he ends up in a position to be able to deploy these assets for the benefit of humanity, he's talking about being able to spend $5 trillion of Japanese foreign reserves. Now, that's $1,000 for every man, woman, and child on the planet. And with that, you can bring roads, fresh water, and education to every single person. You know, you can transform the planet like that. And
well, they stole Lewanta's settlement money, which is $4.5 trillion. They stole it three times, plus another $6.2 trillion that the Queen, again, let's say, contributed to see that payment went through. They've stolen all of it. Plus, they've stolen the gold worldwide. They've stolen the gold. They're hiding the gold in caves, sunken ships, underground bases, and all, you know, all over the planet they're doing this. And I wouldn't be surprised if they've already shipped some off to Mars and the moon as well.
I think that's a very astute point. Something here which we cannot talk about in detail, but we have had confirmation about exactly what you have said about these huge hidden reserves of gold that are hidden away in some very, very strange places.
Mm-hmm.
We know that this is true. We've seen documentation that actually pertains to this. There's a whole backstory to this, and
yes,
we know that you've been following this. This is something that we can talk about offline. You know.
Yes, we will.
You're absolutely correct about your intuition to give this prominence in your research, because it's right at the heart of an awful lot of this. You're quite correct.
Yes. Now, yeah, I would like to talk to you. In fact, it would be nice if we could get a powwow with Benjamin on this, too, because there are some things that I know from my research. He may know or have wind of it. And, you know, it's like we don't all have all the answers. But if we bring the piece of the puzzle that we each have and put them together, we can put it together the whole picture.
Absolutely.
And this is,
well, that's actually what we talk about doing at Camelot. We're really putting the pieces of the puzzle together. We're still constructing it as we speak right now. And that's it. We're trying to create the big picture and find out what's really going on.
Yes. Now, it was interesting for me to sort of tie in some of the things he was talking about with some of the other interviews that you've done. And I'm not really moving away from this topic, per se. I'm sure as you listened to him, you probably had recollections of similar statements that your other interviewees made to you in some of your other interviews.
Well, it's interesting, Don, because there are things that Ben Fulford is very familiar with, and there are other things that he does not know very much about. He's really very tied into the economic picture of the planet. However, he does not know much about MJ-12 or the Committee of the Majority, call them what you will,
mm-hmm.
Which is really fascinating to us, you know, with our whole connection with Dan Burish and with John Lear and basically a lot of the information that we've gotten. So that's a whole ruling element of the planet that Ben is not actually speaking about because he doesn't seem to really know a great deal about them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really important element, you know, as you...
It is the element, I think.
Yeah. So, I mean, you've got the Illuminati on one hand, but you've got the Committee of the Majority on the other, which is the Rockefeller-led, if you want to call it that very loosely. But, you know, who leads who in this particular equation is you know, probably open to debate at the moment. At any rate, you know, that's a really important part of the interview that we mentioned MJ-12 to him, and he did not, you know, have much of a recognition for that whole concept. He tries to stay away from the whole alien ET UFO debate at this time. He's very focused on the Earth and you know, what's going on here. But then he also referred to free energy as being an important solution for the planet to get away from the oil-based economies. And yet we have interviewed, you know, we've got Gordon Novell who's building, you know, free energy craft and trying to take that via the CIA to a whole different place. We've got Ralph Ring who's working with, you know, building more free energy craft and going in a different direction via the public sector. So there's also a huge learning curve in terms of free energy, what's available out there, and how it's been hidden from us that I think even Ben Fulford has not been party to.
Yes. Well, it would behoove him and those with whom he's working with, if his intention is to implement the policies that he described, to make himself aware of these things. It could open up more doors for him. I could see where he could help people that I know that are working on some things just by his intention to do this. And
right.
Instead of, you know, the research is done, inventions are created, and there are plans. There are people who are planning on doing humanitarian projects all over the planet. Well, they don't want that to happen because that... completely and diametrically opposes what they're trying to accomplish themselves.
Right. But you mean the Illuminati.
Yes.
Absolutely. And you know, having somebody like Ben at the forefront of this kind of a movement would be very, very helpful. You know, it goes without saying that if free energy could get, you know, someone like Ben Fulford and the Japanese $5 trillion behind them, you know, we'd be well on our way as a planet to completely revamping the way we live. So that would be that. It's a really inspiring potential to what Ben's talking about. How
yeah,
it's going to play out, how successful he's going to be and his group, we really don't know. It's just a mystery at this time. It's really based on our conversations we've had recently with Dan Burish in terms of the Looking Glass and what has been seen in the future. He's shared some of that with us. We've put a bit of it on our site. We haven't put a lot of it on our site yet. We can share some of that with you if you'd like.
Sure.
But
sure.
Basically, there not everyone is in agreement as to what the future holds.
And of
well,
course,
we're creating it in real time, in
yeah,
a sense.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we're creating it. And I think we can safely say this without revealing too much, that at the moment we don't know whether we can disclose or not. Last year, there was a highly classified project which was designed to take a sneak peek at what the future currently held. And this has all got to do, this is a whole subject here that we haven't talked about in the last hour, but this has got to do with whether the potential 2012 pole shift had been successfully averted by the dismantling of the Stargate and Looking Glass devices that the time-traveling future humans had told the American military were responsible in their history for causing an enormous catastrophe. Now, that was one hell of a sentence there that I just said, and for, you know, right now we just don't have time to go into that. But there was a research project.
You can take
project
some extra time if you want to.
Using time portal technology to see whether the 2012 pole shift had been averted. The summary on that is yes, it has been averted, but there are going to be all kinds of weird things that were going to be happening in the next few years, not all of which were good news. And then, no sooner than that had been seen, so to speak, all in terms of quantum probabilities of the future, then it started to change again. And
several events that were predicted by the Looking Glass apparently have not happened the way it was said were going to happen. In fact, Benazir Bhutto's death was not was a very significant event because it was not on the timeline that we were supposedly on, and it was not seen by the Looking Glass. So this has indicated to Dan Burish, and he has indicated to us, what this means is that basically all bets are off and that the future is now unfolding in a way that has not been predicted.
And as the epilogue on Benazir's assassination, many people were shocked by that and saw that as some kind of a political tragedy, because she was committed to bringing, for instance, peace to the eternally boiling dispute between Pakistan and India. And this was one of the problem areas, and people, those of your listeners who really understand geopolitics will know that this is a huge problematic area, a very dangerous one too. But now what has happened is there looks to be a coalition government in Pakistan in which Musharraf has been significantly disempowered. That was not seen in this Looking Glass research project last year. And that actually is good news and has come about as an indirect or possibly even a direct result, as like a reaction to Benazir's assassination.
Mm-hmm.
Dan Burish himself himself told us that he was very, very reluctant to use the word sacrifice in his lexicon here when describing this. But it really does look as if the fact that, you know, that she was assassinated has caused a chain of events that actually has resulted in something beneficial happening that is likely, more likely to result in peace in that region than the alternative would have been.
Yes.
And I'm kind of speaking a little bit in general terms here, but the point that I'm coming back to is that the future is changing all the time. We create our future. We have the opportunity to change our future, and there are extraordinary science fiction-like paradoxes which occur, because once the future is known through these intelligence probes using these time portal devices, then people who don't like what they see have the opportunity to put a spanner in the works, and this has happened in several different ways, and we really are in unknown territory at the moment. Nobody knows what is going to happen in the next... I mean, nobody knows what's going to happen in the next few years. It's really, really extraordinary times that we're living in. And this rings us right full circle to what we started off talking about.
If I might make an analogy of what the looking glass technology would be like in terms of our consciousness, imagine for a moment that I went around my house cleaning all the windows. Got them spotless, including the mirrors, let's say the mirror in my bathroom. And the general place I like to look outside would be my living room picture window, we'll say. And I have a very clear view. So I go into my bathroom, close the door, turn on hot water, get the shower running, create a lot of steam, and the once clear mirror that I had in the bathroom now becomes fogged up from all the condensation in the bathroom. Now, if I were to open the bathroom door and leave the shower running, that condensation would eventually go out and cloud the picture window where I'm seeing the image of everything that I see out my house. Now, I don't know if this is exactly what happens, but in other words, my consciousness or my conscious application of an act and my attention to that, and that is what occurred in the bathroom, has now spread and affected the view of everything in the house, in the whole house. So in a sense, our consciousness modifies the future based upon all the different variables there are, and throw fear in there and throw their intention and what deviates from their intention and what deviates from our intention and our reaction to what they do and their reaction to what we do. It's an ever-unfolding event, and I don't think they can really exactly predict it, per se.
Just a caveat to what Bill was talking about in terms of what, you know, I guess if you want to call it the Rockefellers and the Illuminati group were doing, was using what is called the Yellow Book, which is a cube. And in that sense, it operates as you were describing your mirror.
Mm-hmm.
They were finding that they can, but by looking at their future, they were also affecting it. But by
yes.
the same token, my understanding of looking glass is that it's not quite as affected in that way. What it shows is probabilities, and that in looking at it, they were not necessarily changing it. However, when you step away from the looking glass, which is, you know, an application of a technology on a natural occurrence, which is a vortex,
mm-hmm.
then you have humans actually looking to their future and applying whatever intelligence they have to their future. And at that point, we are creators of our own future. And so, yes, we do have it within our abilities and our grasp to change the future to some degree. I do believe there are some things that have very, very high probabilities that changing them would not be very easy.
Yes. Yes.
It's some of those events that we are actually trying to tap into at this moment, and at the same time prepare for, I guess you might say.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, we must be prepared for anything, really. We should always be prepared for something anyway. otherwise, we're just sitting around vegging, just waiting for things to happen. And that's not going to result in any kind of progress, or especially when it comes to arriving at a higher state of consciousness.
Right. Arriving at a higher state of consciousness is really the name of the game. We're really looking to move in the earth from the third dimension into the fourth and the fifth density, basically. We're moving as a planet into another dimension. And it's our whole consciousness, as the earth is a living being, and all of us united are moving into something that we haven't been before.
Yes. In this article I told you I wrote, I concluded my article with a statement similar to them saying, look, you decided you want to play in our sandbox. You're trying to play in our sandbox, and we don't want that to happen. That's basically the planet, the way it's run right now. My suggestion is that we just build our own sandbox, rather than keep trying to move into theirs. And that is the problem with the Patriot movement, just the regurgitation of the problems without offering any solutions. And I would suggest that that's probably our energy problem and our food problem and every other problem that we have, is that we continue to try to move through what they have constructed for us. It's of their design and their choice. And we have to start making our own choices. What do either one of you feel about that? Am I nuts or?
No, actually, we created Camelot basically in that spirit. We based it on the real Camelot that was a utopian vision of the future. Our idea was to create, through the use of whistleblowers and people coming forward with research and wonderful ideas for the future, basically a different vision of reality than to break through the matrix that of lies that we all live with, daily in our everyday lives. So, you're right on track as far as that goes. I mean, free energy would be a different way of approaching the future. The internet is a different way. It's a link up between people everywhere on the planet, It's we are in constant contact now with people in different areas of the globe, writing to us, telling us, how we're affecting their lives, and then they reciprocate by affecting our lives and writing to us and telling us of their experiences. I mean, there's a huge symbiosis going on, which is generated by the internet. So new technology is one thing, but new consciousness is really what it's all about.
Yes.
It's what we do with our mind. As you said, eventually we will be all telepathic. I mean, that is what we're moving towards.
Yes. What can we do? What can the listeners to tonight's show do to assist you in any way? What can you think of something that people can do that if they feel so moved and this message is resonating with them, that they want to be a part of this, that they want to help you, what areas could you use help, let's say?
Well, we are always happy to have people that can translate our work into other languages. That's always there. We have a list of things on our website if they want to check the link as to what they can do in smaller ways. In the larger picture, basically, if you make yourself aware and then share the videos and share the information that you learned with other people, then you're doing the most you could possibly do. And, of course, if you yourself become, a creator in your own right, then you're moving along the path in an even faster way. So the way you can help us is to help yourself and help everyone else. It's to become aware. It's really about awakening the planet. So whatever that means to you, you know, go out and do that.
I have another angle on this as well that's kind of slightly more pragmatic, although I fully support everything that Kerry said just mm-hmm. now. And this is this interesting angle, and this might be quite a useful way to end the program here. We know that there are people listening to this show who are on the inside. There always will be. They wouldn't be doing their jobs if there weren't people on the inside who are listening to this. And some of them are off duty because they're good people who are keeping themselves informed. And we have to remember that there are a lot of good people, genuine patriots, who signed up for the military, who signed up for the intelligence services because they thought that they were doing the best thing for this country and the world. And a lot of these people have been made promises. They have been given information and they've been told, listen, you better toe the line, because if you don't toe the line, you and your family are not going to get on the bus when the critical times come. And besides, we'll pay you well and we'll look after you, but you can't count on that if you go breaking ranks. And a lot of these people are wrestling with their consciences right now because they are good people and they are now questioning everything that they themselves have been told by their own lords and masters. And to borrow a phrase from Richard Hoagland, who we interviewed recently, beautiful phrase, who he himself got from an insider, the lie is different at every level. A lot of these people themselves on the inside have been disinformed and misinformed and lied to and manipulated, and a lot of them are starting to wake up to that. And so, our message to them here is, come out, tell us what you know. You may be betrayed at the last moment anyway. You can't count on getting that ticket for the bus. You may just be being taken advantage of right now.
That is my exact sentiments.
Yeah.
Right there.
And so they can contact you, they can contact us. There are ways for them to get their information out. They can give information anonymously. We have ways of cross-checking to know whether people are pulling the wool over their eyes or whether they're really serious. But tell us what you know.
Well, actually, I mean, in one word, one phrase, get the truth out. We will help you get the truth out if you want to come to our website, if you want to contact us in whatever way you dictate. We will help you do that. So that would be a huge service to humanity if there are people out there that want to get the truth out, that know they can corroborate some of the testimonies we've gotten, that they can correct, that they can add to. The more we know as humanity, the more aware we all are, the more correct our story is. This we all become stronger when that happens.
And the truth really does set you free. And the more truth we have, the more free we are. And those of you listening here who can help us distinguish the truth from the lies, then the more free we will all be. And it works also for those people who are retired and maybe in the twilight years of their lives. We would say, go to meet your maker knowing that you've done the right thing. And there are ways to do that. And so we are fully behind you. We know that not everyone in positions of power and influence are evil. Some of them are, but many of them aren't. And we honor everyone whose true commitment is to the welfare of humanity. And so we're all working together here, whether you're on the inside or the outside, and if your heart is in the right place, and that's really where it stops.
Yes. Many of those people you're describing, too, the good people, are under the influence of the types of control that the masses are subjected to as well. Some are aware of that, and some are not even aware. But just the research I've done, and you and others who have studied these shadow government components know that these programs are going on and know that there are people out there that are being used only to be abandoned at the last moment. That is inevitable that will occur.
Yeah, that's right. We've heard personally from George Green, who you will know and many of your listeners will recognize, who has told us that many people in the intelligence services who he knows personally, they're jumping ship and they're going to South America. They're going to places like Paraguay and Ecuador. We don't know why, but they would be doing that for a very good reason, and it would be quite useful to know the reason why they consider that maybe America, which presumably they love, might not be that smarter place to hang around in for too much longer. Now, we don't know whether their information is correct or not, but it would be really good to know why they're doing that.
Mm-hmm. In regard to this story, before we call it a night here, the story of the Norwegian politician who came forth with all this information about the fact that I think he said there were going to be some 2 million Norwegian people, correct me if I'm wrong on this, and maybe they were going to leave somewhere around 6 million on the surface and they would die. And I know that the Norwegians have a seed bank facility where they are storing large amounts of seed to sustain them through this period of who knows what it is, Armageddon or whatever calamity is going to arise. And one of the things that they do in order to find out who has spoken to someone and shared the information, they give each one of them a piece of disinformation. And that way, when the story comes out, they can almost tell which one did the talking, because inevitably the piece of disinformation is so compelling that they have to share that, Planet X being the example.
Yeah.
He may be the only one of all those people that know something about the whole program that was given that information. And so they could immediately go back and say it had to be him. He was the only one.
Yeah. That's exactly right, Don. They do that with written documents as well. They intentionally insert typographical mistakes in written documents so that when those same mistakes occur elsewhere,
yeah,
then they know exactly where it's come from.
Yeah.
It's a well-known tracking mechanism. It's the oldest trick in the book. But yes, I mean, you're absolutely right about that. The Norwegian story, which is on our website, you got the figures almost right there. It's a very small population, Norway. It's only 4.5 million, actually.
Oh, okay.
Apparently, the plan is that 2 million people can go underground in total safety, and the other 2.6 million or 2.5 million would be left to fend for themselves. These are plans. This guy knows exactly where he is going to be taking this bus to, or this train, or this plane to, towards the end of 2011, when something is planned or anticipated or may possibly happen, that all of these trillions of dollars of expenditure, the largest construction project in known human history, not only in Norway, but in every Western country, it's an insurance policy against something. And, you know, it would sure be good to know what that is, but some people are privileged and some people are not. Now, we've heard that in other countries with small populations, like Sweden and Switzerland, they also have the capacity to take the entire country underground if need be. Now, in America, I very, very much doubt as if there are the capacity to take 300 million people underground, and I don't think they would want to. I think it's going to be a far smaller number. And, but why this is happening, whether the threat or the situation that they're guarding against is still in place or not, we don't know. We've spoken to Dan Burish about this with reference to the 2012 pole shift. He says that this is not going to happen. He says his actual words at the Laughlin conference when he was interviewed on stage, he said there is not going to be a catastrophe, there's going to be a renaissance. I mean, it was wonderful to hear that, you know,
mm-hmm.
because this is what you and we and all of your listeners are rooting for.
Standard military thinking
is defensive, and standard military thinking is conservative. And so, therefore, even if there's the faintest chance that all of this is wrong, the military, in their view, would not be doing their jobs if they didn't still, you know, plan to stock up these bases with 5 years' worth of fresh water and hydroponics and training people like Dan Sherman, who we also interviewed, who is trained as a telepath for a future event when all communications would be rendered useless. You know, I mean, even back in the early 1980s, they were planning for this kind of stuff by training a team of telepaths, because radio communications won't be possible because there's going to be some kind of an event. We don't know for sure whether this situation is still a threat or not, or whether this is old thinking and they're just going through the motions. You know, it's like they don't want to cancel the insurance policy yet, but we're probably all right.
Yes. Well, when I think outside the box, I think outside the box. To me, what rang true is that, yes, there are the underground bases. I did not buy the bit about Planet X, nor did I necessarily agree with the reason for taking 2 million people down there. In fact, another take would be that they would become part of the food supply, if you get my meaning.
Well, right. I mean, there's the whole alien agenda side of things.
Yes.
So, absolutely. I mean, there are a lot of different levels to this story. And as I say, we're still on the quest. Project Camelot is all about, you know, interviewing people, getting to the root of the question, and finding out what the answers are. And hopefully there's more than one alternative out there.
Yes. Well, we're out of time. I want to thank you so much for coming on Evident Footprints. In fact, I'm working on Project Evident Footprints, so I want to invite you back again. and that is a difficult thing because you travel so much. But if you could please keep in touch and let me know when you can make yourself available for an interview, I will work you into my schedule as quickly as possible.
Thank you so much, Don.
Thank you, Don. It's a great pleasure and it's a privilege for us to be able to share our learning and our thoughts with you and all your listeners on the show. And the final thing that we want to say to every one of your listeners is you make a difference, you can make a difference, and some of you can even make much more of a difference than you dare think. If you can summon your courage in your hands and come out with what you know, then you're really doing your part for the human race. And we appeal to you personally here. And we know that you know who you are, who are hearing these words right now.
Well said. Now, I want to encourage the listeners to visit your site, which is projectcamelot.org. And definitely look at the videos. You can download them. You can look at them on YouTube and Google Video, as well as, I'm not sure if it's all of your videos, but you do have audio archives also.
Yes, we have, they're available, all of our videos are available to be downloaded or to be seen on Google and YouTube.
Okay, now, if I have your permission, I will create a page on my website specifically to put the transcripts of or any communications that you would like me to put there to assist you in getting the word out. And I already have links there now. But
sure. You're welcome to, you know, reprint our articles if you like.
Okay. Well, I will post them, and I'll let the people print them out and send them around. You have been not just great guests, but great friends, and you have been very important people in my life for the past few years. And, you know, I want to personally thank you for not only what you've done for me personally, but all the introductions to really important and wonderful people who are part of this movement. And I'm indebted to you for that.
Well, thank you. We feel the same about you, and we also feel the same about, we feel we are blessed with the people that we've been able to meet in person and share time with and learn from and share information with. They're really, each and every one of the people that we've interviewed are really stellar people.
Well, I agree, and you are among them. You're at the top of the list. And I also want to let you know that at the first opportunity I have, I'm going to make it a point to meet with you personally.
Oh, great. That'd be lovely.
That would be fun, Don. That would be great.
And we'll have a big party when that happens. Maybe there'll be a bunch of us together.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Right on.
Wait. You guys travel safely, and we have your backs, so don't worry.
Oh, thank you so much.
And we know you've got ours, so we'll just help each other.
Absolutely. That's okay. What it's all about.
All right. You take care.
Thank you,
folks,
Don.
You have been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com, and our special guests this evening were Carrie Cassidy and Bill Ryan from ProjectCamelot.org. And please visit their website at the address, and again, that is projectcamelot.org. Also, you will be seeing some of their work. I have links to their site on my website, directlightproductions.com. And go there and look at some of the photos that I posted up recently. We've got pictures of Mars and some other planets and moons, and some interesting information there. And it's going to keep growing with time. Especially if I add things from the Project Camelot site, which I will be doing. And we are grateful for our guest's appearance on our show tonight. And I ask you to tune in tomorrow night. I am having another wonderful guest. We're going to be talking about sound and frequency healing. And Deanne Hampton will be on Evident Footprints. And scientist, inventor, author, lecturer, and teacher Jim Murray will be my guest on Friday night. In the meantime, I want to wish everyone a wonderful and peaceful good night.
This is Bill Tiller of Tiller.org. You're listening to BBSRadio.com. Don't forget to tune in to The Infinite Consciousness with Eva Herr every Sunday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Enjoy.